Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008. Joining us on the line, as he always does in this horribly bright and early slot, is Professor Adrian Puren. He's the Acting Executive Director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. A very, very good morning.
Good morning, Howard, and good morning to your listeners.
So we are now in the midst of the third wave. There doesn't seem to be any doubt about it. Regulations have increased in terms of gatherings. The President made the announcement. Before they do that, do they chat to the NICD? Does the NICD form part of those discussions?
Yes, so the NICD's contribution is varied. Obviously, the daily numbers that come through are from the NICD, so they certainly look at those. And in addition to that, the NICD provides leadership to the South African COVID-19 Modeling Consortium, and that consortium consists of various universities and organizations that look at the different parameters. So they have developed a model around what would the different scenarios look like based on the current state of the data. And in addition, this modeling consortium will also be looking at, I think it's every 2 weeks, in terms of, you know, bed capacity, oxygen supply and so forth, how that the current trajectories will affect those particular types of requirements. So yes, so the NICD plays various roles, as well as contributing to some of the decision making around the decisions of, let's say, testing strategies and so forth, in conjunction of obviously with the National Health Laboratory Service that actually provides the actual testing itself. So it's a range of activities. Yes,
and I must tell you, I've started to use the NICD website more and more as my source of information, because it's incredible. And well done to you, you know, for managing that, for making sure that it is always up to date. There's always the right information or relevant information there. Very, very easy to navigate as well.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I must not forget the other part of these. This is not just the test numbers, but also, you know, the hospital admissions. That's also a really critical component in terms of hospitalizations and deaths. And within that, hospitalizations, you know, where are people distributed? Are they in the general admissions wards? Are they in ICU? You know, those are the important criteria that are also really critical with regard to projection. So again, if you're thinking about decision making, again, these types of numbers feed into the various provincial so-called resurgence plans. So they can have a look at, you know, what is happening with the numbers. How does that link to our planning in terms of bed capacity, oxygen supply, and so on? Yes.
And I see that the other thing that you have, maybe I hadn't noticed it prior, but maybe because it's become more relevant, is the monthly COVID-19 in children. You track that as well.
Yes, absolutely. So that's also very, very important. And another aspect that will, I think, be coming along very soon is also to look at long COVID, as it's called.
Yes, or, yes.
Chronic events post acute COVID infection, so that'll be an important contributor as well.
Right. The numbers obviously are up significantly. Is there any sense, if you look at your modelling, as to how long the third wave will last us? How far are we from the peak?
I think we're fairly close. If I saw the numbers, I think the moving average that's required is about 5,600 cases per day. I think we're about 4,600 or thereabouts. So I think we're pretty close. So technically, I think we really are approaching a national third wave. I think Gauteng, I think, was it on Friday, entered its third wave.
Yes,
already.
Yes.
So those four provinces that we mentioned and have been mentioning for a while now, it's the Northern Cape, the Northwest Province, the Free State, and Gauteng are now technically into the third wave. But we are certainly seeing increases overall, both cases as well as hospital admissions as well, yes.
Right. And any sense as to how long the third wave will last?
So once you enter that third wave, the projection is that you should, not that you should, but that you could probably reach that within 2 to 3 months post the inflection point, if you like.
Right.
So I think it really depends on how we approach this. I mean, we've now at level 2 or an adjusted level 2. But there are still factors which I suppose the government and we as individuals can still take to really try and stave off that. But I think sometimes it's very difficult, as you saw in the second wave, we really had to go to level 3 to have some really marked effect in terms of decreasing those numbers.
Right. And in terms of the vaccine rollout, we've seen around about 45,000 to 65,000 a day, not nearly enough, but hopefully that will increase. What are we seeing in terms of side effects from the vaccine?
Yeah, so I think the main interest obviously is the, I suppose those rare side effects. Mm. So again, I've not seen any numbers with regard to the thromboembolic, thrombocytopenic type side effects. Those, I've not seen any further reports on that, but I think that that's where the interest is. And as you've noted, there are now more, I suppose, vigorous efforts to try and collect that type of data in order for us to really get a sense of whether or not this vaccine or the vaccines, because we're going to have multiple vaccines. I noticed the president mentioned the Sputnik and Sinovac last night. So those vaccines.
Yeah, that was a bit of a worry for me, wasn't it? Because, is there enough information on these? Well, I mean, we've got to look at them separately. It's not fair to lump them together.
Yeah, no,
but do we have enough information yet, to say with confidence that we should be giving this to our population?
Yeah, so I think that that's where it's critical to have, you know, our South African Health Products Regulatory Authority in place, because they obviously are an independent body that should be able to look and see where else these particular vaccines have been applied, what the state of those regulatory authorities are in those particular countries, and what they have decided to do. So I think we should give some level of confidence, I hope, to SAHPRA in order for us to take those decisions about the introduction of vaccines that may not have always gone through a regulatory authority that's obviously recognized by SAHPRA.
And SAHPRA, we know, is very cautious and very methodical in their approach. I certainly don't believe that they will be willy-nilly allowing a vaccine into the country that is either going to be ineffective or potentially dangerous.
Absolutely. I think they've also publicly, you know, said very often safety is a primary consideration for them, as well as effectiveness, yes.
Oh, and do you know of any countries? I mean, I know that that Zimbabwe, for example, is using the Sinovac, but do we know any other countries that are successfully using the Sputnik?
Yes, I was trying to think, was it Qatar, one of those particular countries, I think Turkey. So both Sinovac and Sputnik have been used by various countries to really enhance their vaccine coverage in the face of, you know, not being able to access the more conventional or conventionally approved vaccines such as Pfizer or Moderna, for example.
Right. Does the NICD get involved or on any level around looking into the origins of the virus? And obviously we know that right in the beginning, this idea that it was leaked from a lab was flighted. Everybody said no. Facebook banned the discussion around it. And all of a sudden now, if you'll excuse this expression, it's leaking back into mainstream media as well as social media. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yes, sir. I suppose I probably subscribe to a more conventional view in the sense that when we look at zoonoses, and coming back to bats in particular, you know, those events take time. They're not just single events. You know, you just don't have a coronavirus suddenly entering into a human and then that human transmits it. I think it's more complex than that. And as, you know, there could be multiple, events of contact, for example, with coronaviruses. And it's that one particular event, which is successful in terms of from jumping, let's say, from a bat or an intermediate to a human, and then another set of steps that will lead from human to human spread. So I think we just need to have that conventional view in mind. I think so-called lab events and modifications are probably, we may not know about them, obviously, if they are accidents, because they may not always be reported. I know that, for example, there have been accidents around smallpox, for example. So yes, those events do occur, but they're probably rare because of the stringency around those BSL-4, that's biosafety level 4 in terms of controls. And again, of course, conspiracy theories may well crop up to add to that particular mix. But South Africa, again, at the NICD, we have a BSL-4 level laboratory, and there's a great interest from our BSL-4 colleagues to actually investigate the origins of some of these particular viruses that are in circulation. And of course, bats are already seen as a primary source for new zoonoses that will occur.
Right. I've always had I thought it was an irrational fear of bats. Turns out it's perfectly rational.
Bats out of hell.
Exactly right. Professor Adrian Puren, Acting Executive Director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD. Thank you, as always, for chatting to us. It is 6:58, about to go 6:59. A few of you asking about that website, nicd.ac.za.